Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A very important element of the war for the free world, indeed arguably the most serious threat the United States faces as it confronts a host of adversaries and challenges in that war, involves the vulnerabilities of our electric grid. The critical infrastructure that is the source of all of the other critical infrastructures that supports life as we know it. I think it's no exaggeration to say that one of, if not the most prolific and most effective watchman on the wall with respect to this particular problem has been Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Dr. Pry has an extensive background in intelligence matters, working for 10 years at the Central Intelligence Agency. He served on the House Armed Services Committee and on the Congressional Blue Ribbon Commission to assess the threat to the United States from electromagnetic pulse, EMP, something we'll be talking about with him throughout this program. We have a full hour, I'm very pleased to say, to really drill down on the nature of the threats to our grid and what can be done about it, with one of the country's preeminent experts on the subject. Dr. Pry, welcome back. Great to have you with us, sir.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
You and one of the other leaders of the effort to arouse our country to this threat and do something about it are James Woolsey, President Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, had a very powerful op-ed in the Wall Street Journal last week. It was entitled "The Growing Threat from an EMP Attack." Dr. Pry, first of all, congratulations on this most recent important contribution to our situational awareness. And I'd ask you just to sort of summarize the thrust of this essay that you and Jim Woolsey published and why it is so timely.
Well, the original title was "The Greatest Threat, EMP." And we say that because Paul Singer, a billionaire hedge fund manager, recently concurred with this judgment, this warning that we and the Congressional EMP Commission and the Strategic Posture Commission, and other major U.S. government studies have all concurred on, that electromagnetic pulse, while it's little known to the public, is perhaps the greatest threat that our civilization faces.
Tell us what that threat is. I mean, for listeners of this program, I think there's a pretty high familiarity with electromagnetic pulse or EMP, but what is it exactly and how does it, afflict us, or might it?
Well, one of the ways an EMP can be generated, is by the detonation, the high altitude detonation of a nuclear weapon, above an altitude of 30 kilometers, so high that you wouldn't hear the blast. There wouldn't be any radiation or fallout effects. You might not even know it happened if it was on a cloudy day. But it would generate an electromagnetic pulse, which is a super energetic radio wave that can destroy electronics over vast distances to the line of sight on the horizon. So if you detonated the bomb high enough, for example, 200 kilometers over the center of the United States, it would put an EMP field down over the entire country and destroy electronics across that whole area. And one of the main concerns is that it would cause a blackout, a nationwide blackout, destroying things like EHV transformers that are the cornerstone of our modern civilization and that are not easily replaced. And the blackout would not be temporary, but protracted, lasting weeks, months, probably years if you're talking about a nuclear EMP attack.
Peter, without getting too much into the weeds on this, how does the intense radio wave of an electromagnetic pulse actually cause such damage to electronic devices and these extremely high-voltage transformers?
Because this radio wave is full of energy. It's much more powerful than lightning, and it's faster than lightning. And unlike lightning, which is a point phenomenon, which will come down and strike a single point, the electromagnetic pulse basically does what like super lightning. Think of it like super lightning, but it's striking everywhere within the EMP field. It basically overloads the circuits and burns them out.
So that's the point. These things are not designed for the kinds of electric load that would be generated and imposed upon them by such an EMP attack against this country.
Yes, exactly. Even things that you think couldn't fail, like extra high voltage transformers, for instance, you know, can be damaged, even though they're designed to take 750,000 volts. Those too could be overloaded and destroyed by the EMP.
And when that happens, Peter, and I guess this is sort of the crux of the matter, what is the implication for an electric grid that relies critically on these kinds of high-voltage transformers?
It means it's destruction. EHV transformers, as I said before, they're the cornerstone of modern civilization, of modern electronic civilization. Electric grids can't operate without them. You know, they are to modern society what the aqueducts in Rome were to the Roman Empire. They enable you to basically take electricity from someplace like Niagara Falls and project it hundreds of miles, you know, down away to New York City, where there's another EHV transformer that'll step it down so that energy can be utilized. And in addition to the transformers, I mean, there's also other electronic components that are also vulnerable and vital to all critical infrastructures, like SCADA systems, supervisory control and data acquisition systems. These are little computers that basically regulate everything, not just in the electric grid, but in all the critical infrastructures have got them. Communications, transportation, banking and finance systems, the food and water systems. These things are particularly susceptible to EMP. And when they go, you basically lose all the critical infrastructures. In addition to losing the structures from the loss of the electric power grid, which is the infrastructure of infrastructures, you know, because nothing can run without electricity. Everything depends directly or indirectly upon it. So you're getting sort of a double whammy here. You know, when you lose the electric grid, that will collapse all the critical infrastructures basically within 72 hours. But in addition to that, you can get immediate failure of the critical infrastructures from the loss of the SCADAs. And those aren't the only things vulnerable. All electronics are potentially vulnerable directly or indirectly.
Yeah. This is a sort of staggeringly horrific prospect, needless to say. And I guess the question that occurs to most of us is, well, can't we just put another one in, or can't we just reboot the system if these transformers were affected in the kind of fashion that you've talked about? That's evidently not the case, as you've established, Dr. Peter Pry, in the EMP Threat Commission, among other things. But talk a little bit about why that is so.
Well, you can't reboot the transformers when they're destroyed. You could potentially replace them. And one of the bills before Congress that's been stalled in Congress for 3 years, the SHIELD Act, one of its provisions was to require the electric power industry to have enough spare transformers on hand so that we would be able to recover from an EMP disaster. One of the things that's hard to understand as you drill down into this issue is, why does the electric power industry not have sufficient, you know, transformers on hand to recover from an EMP? And of course, it has to do with money. You know, these things are really expensive. You know, they cost tens of millions of dollars, and they're not easy to replace either.
Peter Pry, we're going to pause for just a moment on those points. We're going to come back to further discussion about the impediments to getting these transformers protected or having the spares on hand, and what's happened with the legislation and more, in our full hour of very special conversation with one of the country's leading authorities on the vulnerability of our electric grid and what not only can be done about it, but of what must be done. More with Dr. Peter Prime right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change your minds.
They're not going to change your minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
On August 2nd, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors,
dedicated to supporting the troops and their family.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families. Retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're visiting with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, the co-author with R. James Woolsey of a very important piece in the Wall Street Journal last week concerning the extraordinary threat the country faces from attacks upon our electric grid. Dr. Pry, in the previous segment, explained how vulnerable that grid is to particularly the sort of threat that a high-altitude electromagnetic pulse nuclear-driven attack might entail. And Peter, I just wanted to turn, if I could, to a variation on that theme. That's kind of the most efficient way on a wholesale basis, as you said, to take down our electric grid. But talk about alternatives that the EMP Threat Commission, on which you serve as a staff member with great distinction, found could be done sort of retail using a technology known as radio frequency weapons.
Yes, these are non-nuclear weapons that can be cobbled together from parts available in Radio Shack. So basically, they don't have the kind of lethal radius that a nuclear weapon has. In fact, most radio frequency weapons have a range of only, you know, a couple of hundred feet. But that's enough so that you could cause a significant threat to the electric grid. We did an experiment when I was on the House Armed Services Committee panel on counterterrorism, where we hired a person who had a master's degree in electrical engineering and gave him a couple of student assistants and a small budget and told him to go forth and using only design information available on the internet and parts that he could purchase at Radio Shack, you know, see if he could take a year and build a radio frequency weapon. Well, they built two of them, both of which worked. One of them was designed to fit inside a Volkswagen bus. The idea was you could drive this thing down Wall Street and short out all the computers and cause a financial crisis.
This is the sort of thing that we see from time to time in Hollywood films about, you know, attacks on casinos and the like. But this is no drill, as you say. This is something that you've demonstrated could, in fact, afflict us. We're visiting with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He is the author of a number of books, including Electric Armageddon, Civil Military Preparedness for an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe. Dr. Pry, you were talking about one threat scenario in addition to the high-altitude EMP, namely radio frequency weapons. Let's turn to two others that are very concerning. One we had a recent episode with that was very, very ominous indeed. Physical sabotage against the grid. Talk a little bit about the incident out in Northern California last year and what its lessons are.
Yes, on the 16th of April last year, parties unknown attacked the Metcalf Transformer substation outside San Jose, which services the Silicon Valley. It appeared to be a team of about six people, and it was highly professional. You know, they used AK-47s to attack the transformers, not in a random way. They knew exactly where to target them, where to shoot. It was a very well-organized operation. The people who trained the U.S. Navy SEALs were brought in to look at the tactics that were employed, and they said this is how the SEALs would do it, and they compared the quality of the operation to them. So that's another major concern, where you can use high-powered rifles or explosives to attack transformers and basically sabotage them. The U.S. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission did a study that showed that if you took out just nine select transformer substations in the United States, you could potentially cause a nationwide blackout that would last weeks or months. And this is of particularly alarming right now, when our southern border is obviously undefended and you've got terrorist groups like ISIS, you know, openly threatening to attack the United States.
Yeah. We have had, as you know, Dr. Peter Pry, an incident back in June, I believe, at the border, a substation near Nogales, Arizona, that had an improvised explosive device put near a large fuel tank. And had it gone off, you would have seen very, very clearly the kind of effects of this sort of physical sabotage. Peter, turn, if you would, to one other threat axis, as professionals like you call it, namely the possibility or indeed the evidence of cyber warfare being used to attack our electric grid and perhaps achieve similar kinds of results to those you've just described.
Yes, this is a major concern of the Department of Defense. You know, we even have a command called Cyber Command to defend our military infrastructure against the cyber attacks. But we're particularly concerned with cyber attacks being used against the civilian infrastructure. And this is where you would use computer bugs or hacking to get into the SCADA systems that I described earlier. These are these computers that regulate everything. And by causing them to malfunction, bring down the grid and bring down everything else. And the way this could work is you could, by inserting a computer virus into a SCADA system, for example, you know, that regulates the way the energy goes into an EHV transformer. That electricity, the electrical energy, has to go in a particular way, and the SCADAs regulate that to make sure that it always happens in the same way, because the transformer can be destroyed by the tremendous amount of voltage that's flowing through the electric power grid. In effect, you can use bugs to turn that energy against the power grid itself and destroy the power grid components, including transformers. This was done experimentally, you know, in a test called Aurora. It used to be classified, and you couldn't discuss it, but several years ago it was declassified, and the experiment shown to Congress, you know, where they did, in fact, use computer bugs to destroy a generator. Now, the theory is you could scale that up and use computer bugs and hacking across the whole grid and possibly bring it down for a protracted period. And this is a real and present danger, like the others we've been talking about, too, and not just science fiction, because a few weeks ago, you know, Russian computer hackers that they believe they're associated with the Russian intelligence services put out a bug called Dragonfly that attacked 1,000 power plants in Western Europe and the United States.
This is the kind of evidence, Dr. Peter Pry, that you have been amassing, among other places, in your current incarnation as the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, to arouse our countrymen and women to the fact that, as you say, these aren't simple hypothetical problems. These are problems with which we have had, unfortunately, some experience. But even if none of those things were to happen to us, Peter, no enemy, including several who have made no secret of their belief that this kind of vulnerability could be very usefully exploited, even if none of them were to take advantage of the vulnerability and use the weapons they've amassed and employ the doctrine that they have, there is another facet to this problem that makes it absolutely imperative that we address it. Talk a little bit about the naturally occurring threats to our grid.
Yes, the sun can cause an electromagnetic pulse. And has caused them over the centuries in the form of geomagnetic storms. You know, what happens is the sun puts out a coronal mass ejection. Some people, you know, the non-technical name for it is a solar flare. And it will strike the Earth's magnetosphere and call it to waffle around back and forth. And that's one of the ways in which a nuclear weapon causes the EMP, by deforming the magnetosphere. And this can cause an electromagnetic pulse, or in the form of geomagnetic storm, that, just like a nuclear weapon, can cover a continental-sized region, or, unlike a nuclear weapon, can do more than what you could accomplish with a single nuke, and expose the entire planet to an electromagnetic pulse simultaneously.
And Peter Pry, what are the probabilities of such a massive coronal ejection hitting the Earth?
Well, NASA recently warned that the likelihood of this happening is about 12% every decade. 12% a decade.
But it is a certainty that it will happen at some point is the real bottom line on this. And the fact is, as you say, that it can happen in the next decade, roughly about the odds of Russian roulette. Peter Pry is our guest. We're going to be visiting with him about what the implications of this kind of devastation might be for our society and for you. Straight ahead.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Lately, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has been touting her new memoir entitled Hard Choices. Now, however, she seems to want us to believe that the hard choices on U.S. foreign policy were made by President Obama, and most of them were bad choices at that. That dog won't hunt. While the White House has clearly played a dominant role in many of the misbegotten policies that have made the planet a much more dangerous place, Mrs. Clinton was responsible for executing many of them. Until now, as the world explodes in the words of Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, and as she prepares to run for president, there was not much evidence Hillary Clinton disagreed with Team Obama's direction. We have had enough of the Obama-Clinton policies and all of their perpetrators. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement? And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them.
When you make fun of them.
When you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change your minds.
They're not going to change your minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
We're back visiting with one of the true national treasures of our time, in my estimation. He is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, a man who has devoted most of his professional life to understanding and, more importantly, really, to engaging the rest of us in addressing critical threats to this country, notably from various means of taking down our electric grid, which, as he has said, is the cornerstone of our 21st century society. Dr. Pry, I'd like to turn from the various ways in which the grid could be disrupted, damaged, perhaps even destroyed, and taken out for protracted periods of time, months for sure, possibly years, and visit with you a little bit based on your various professional experiences, as well as your own writings on the subject, notably Electric Armageddon and Apocalypse Unknown. What would the consequences be for a 21st century society like ours if the electric grid over widespread parts of the United States were to cease to function for months or perhaps a year?
Well, it's not by accident that the titles of my books are Electric Armageddon and Apocalypse Unknown. It would be an Armageddon. It would be an apocalypse. The Congressional EMP Commission, on which I served, estimated that given a nationwide blackout lasting a year, we could lose 9 of 10 Americans to starvation, disease, and societal collapse. And when you get down into the numbers, it's easy to see why this would be so. There's only a three-month food supply in the entire United States when you look at what's in the regional food warehouses. And that starts to spoil 72 hours after the lights go out, you know, because that's all only the amount of fuel that they have to run the emergency generators. And likewise, hospitals, police stations, their emergency generators will fail within 72 hours either. Cell phone towers end up going down. So you end up with no emergency services. A good example in nature, we've actually learned this from things like hurricanes. Look what happened in Hurricane Katrina, 24 hours after the light goes out, and you lose the police. There's no running water. You know, people have to evacuate because they can't live anymore in cities. And the gangs come out. The worst elements of society seem to come out within 24 hours after the light came out. And it happens. We've seen it happen in Hurricane Andrew as well. You know, people ended up having to stay by their homes with rifles and put up signs, you know, threatening that they were armed to protect their homes. Since there are no telephones, you can't call the police.
Yeah, one of the things that I guess, again, doesn't quite compute for most of us is why it would be that, you know, the generators would go out and you wouldn't simply refuel them to keep them running so that the food wouldn't spoil, the telephones would work, the police would, you know, respond and all the rest of it.
Because the fuel infrastructure also collapses. Those SCADAs that I had described earlier are also necessary to run natural gas and, you know, petrol pipelines that provide the fuel. Gas pumps won't work at gas stations. People experienced that during Hurricane Sandy, where people would line up at the few gas stations that happened to have emergency generators, you know, with buckets to try to get gasoline so that they could keep warm in their homes and to fuel their cars and keep those running. And once the local gas, so you can't even access the gas at local emergency gas stations, which tend not to have emergency generators. You lose that almost immediately.
Yeah. Peter, one of the other things, you mentioned this stunning statistic that 9 out of 10 Americans may not make it if the power goes out and stays out over large parts of the country for a year. I had somebody point out to me that if you were one of those 10% that did, in fact, survive, you probably wouldn't like the company you're keeping. Talk a little bit about this societal breakdown business. You touched on it a moment ago, but when people are desperate, the implications for the kind of society that we're accustomed to are pretty grim.
Yes, that's right. And Hurricanes Andrew and Katrina both, one of the things the EMP Commission did is that it studied the consequences of a you know, wide range of natural disasters that happened in the United States, or human-caused blackouts as well, the disasters where there had been power failure for a protracted time, protracted in this case just being days or weeks. And Katrina was probably one of the longest blackout situations over a large area, and that did last months. And we found that very quickly in all of these cases, law and order would break down. And why is that? Well, you know, police and fire departments, they have families too, and they want to make sure their families are taken care of. So you end up losing large numbers of your law enforcement people and your emergency services because they're home trying to take care of their own family and rescue and save themselves. And so what's left? You know, the organized parts of society tend to be criminal elements and gangs who want to take advantage of the situation. In the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, armed gangs came out of the woodwork just for hell-raising purposes, in addition to the looting and things like that that you would understand, but they deliberately were taking pot shots at firemen, and there was an all-out battle over a bridge in New Orleans between police and an armed gang, you know, that where they were just being attacked for no apparent reason. So this kind of incredibly destructive hooliganism is one of the things that you might expect in the aftermath of a protracted EMP. But then what about normal folks?
This could, in short, give rise to what Mahmoud Ahmadinejad of Iran famously promised, namely that a world without America was not only desirable but achievable. And so whether it is as a result of one or the other of these sorts of attacks, notably the high-altitude electromagnetic pulse attack, the most efficient way to do this, or even just a naturally occurring bad solar storm, we are really looking at the end of our nation as we've known it. Is there anything to be done, Peter, to prevent this horrific prospect?
Before I move on to anything to be done, just let me make one more point about the threats, Frank. Very important point that Jim Woolsey and Paul Stockton have both made.
Paul was a former Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Obama Defense Department.
Yeah, exactly. The way we need to think about these threats, is we have to worry about them all simultaneously. Because if you look at the military doctrines of Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran, what they call their all-out cyber warfare doctrine includes all of these threats, all of them. You know, it's a combined arms operation. They call it an all-out cyber warfare operation. It would combine. They're throwing in the kitchen sink, you know, using nuclear MP, cyber attacks, and physical sabotage. And Paul Stockton suggested at the London conference that they would also take advantage of space weather, just like military operations across history have always thought of the weather, that something like this might happen in the aftermath of a geomagnetic storm because the bad guys would be watching and looking for the most opportune moment. So one of the problems we have in defending against these things is people end up thinking in stovepipe terms, and you end up having with the cyber guys arguing that their threat deserves higher priority over the physical sabotage guys, and everybody saying that their threats deserve higher priority over the EMP because that's never going to happen. That's exactly the wrong way to think about this. One of the first steps we need to solve these problems is to have a doctrine that looks at the world in a realistic way, the way the bad guys look at it. Basically, EMP, an all-out cyber warfare doctrine, it is going to be to the 21st century what the German Blitzkrieg was to the 20th, and it's going to hit us unexpectedly. The German Blitzkrieg was a combined arms operation using armor, aircraft, and fast-moving infantry, and used in a way that had not been anticipated by the Western democracies, and nearly enabled the Nazis to conquer the world because they took us by surprise.
It comes down to what has been said was true at the time of 9/11, was that we had a failure of imagination. This is even worse, Dr. Peter Pry, because, of course, our enemies have served notice upon us of what they are capable of doing, what they plan on doing, and yet we persist in not taking the sorts of steps that are well within our ability to actually, if not eliminate the vulnerabilities that we've been describing, certainly greatly mitigate them. We'll talk more about how we might do that and why we're not doing it with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, currently with the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for a final segment with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, currently the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, one of the preeminent authorities on matters involving threats to this country, and most especially threats to its electric grid, the underpinning of our 21st century America. And Peter, before we turn to what specifically could be done and needs to be done, give us one further insight into why minimizing threats to an electric grid of a nation like ours is a serious mistake.
Well, we face a clear and present danger because the enemy is telegraphing to us that they are coming after us this way. You know, on the 9th of June, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula blacked out the electric grid in the entire nation of Yemen. It's the first time in history that a whole nation has been put into blackout. Last year also, the Knights Templar drug cartel, just across our border, blacked out a state in Mexico, 420,000 people, so that they could go in there and execute political leaders. And last but not least, but during the nuclear crisis, in fact, on the very day that the Metcalf Transformer substation was attacked on April 16th that we were talking about before, North Korea apparently practiced a nuclear EMP attack by orbiting its KSM-3 satellite over the Washington-New York City corridor at the perfect trajectory and optimum altitude for taking out the eastern grid of the United States, which generates 75% of our electricity.
At a moment, they were broadcasting that they were working on a strategic plan to strike the U.S. mainland. So, Peter Pry, these are all ample, I think, warnings to us that we have to fix the vulnerabilities of our grid. How difficult is it to do that? Do we know what is involved? Do we have the technologies required for it?
Well, this is the reason I've chosen this particular threat to focus on so much of my professional career, because there's no excuse for the United States to be vulnerable to EMP. We've known for 50 years how to protect our military systems and military infrastructures using things like surge arresters and Faraday cages and blocking devices. And it wouldn't be expensive either. The EMP Commission estimated that by using these proven technologies that we've had success with in the Department of Defense, you know, we could protect the national electric grid for about $2 billion. Moreover, the further more we study this problem, the less expensive we can bring the cost down. $2 billion is what we give away every year in foreign aid to Pakistan.
This is an extraordinary fact that the technologies have been used by the Pentagon for 50 years. They involve some fairly prosaic techniques. They are accessible to the civilian authorities as well as to the military if they have the wit and will to adopt them. Why is it, Dr. Pry, that we haven't seen those technologies brought to bear to date to protect the electric grid comprehensively as you've recommended?
Well, it comes down to bureaucratic politics. This is just another example of how broken Washington is. There has even been strong bipartisan support to do something about this problem in Congress. There was a bill called the GRID Act in 2010, sponsored not by conservative Republicans, but by some of the most liberal members of Congress, you know, Henry Waxman, and it received strong bipartisan support. The GRID Act passed Congress with unanimous support by liberal Democrats and conservative Republicans alike, but it was stopped by one member of the Senate. Similarly, the SHIELD Act, which is a Republican bill sponsored by Trent Franks, and also enjoys strong bipartisan support. But, you know, one member of Congress has been holding it up on committee, you know, for 3 years, and it hasn't been able to pass. So that's been the problem. And the biggest problem is called the NERC. It's the North American Electric Reliability Corporation. That it basically is the lobby for the electric power industry. And they do not want any additional regulation of their industry, even if it's to protect it against EMP, even if it means saving the lives of 9 of 10 Americans. They have been fighting bitterly at the federal level and keeping things blocked at the federal level from solving this problem.
This is particularly extraordinary when you think about it, Dr. Pry, because these are the folks, the electric utilities, that at least in terms of financial investments and assets and equities would seemingly have the greatest stake of any in fixing this problem. The North American Electric Reliability Corporation is, as you say, their kind of, trade association is the way I think of it, but it's also the regulator at the federal level. How in practice has that contributed to the problem that you're talking about with inaction in these ways in which clearly action is so needed?
Well, you're right, Frank. Officially, the NERC is supposed to be the organization for electric reliability that works with the feds to make sure that the grid isn't vulnerable to cyber attacks or sabotage or to EMP. But in practice, it's like asking the fox to guard the chicken coop. And they have basically used their positions to stall not just on EMP protection, but on all of these areas. You know, the U.S. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, that is their partner in the federal government, you know, asked them to come up with a plan to protect against cyber attacks 5 years ago, and they still haven't produced anything. There was an incident in 2003. The great Northeast blackout of 2003 was caused by a falling tree branch. It took them a decade to come up with a vegetation management plan to better protect against falling tree branches. And who knows how effective that plan is, because these plans that NERC comes up with are opaque to the public. You know, they claim that for proprietary reasons, the public is not entitled to look at how they plan to defend against cyber or against falling tree branches, for that matter.
So these are standards that they have developed, but the requirements are by design not terribly demanding and in all likelihood not terribly effective. Peter Pry, despite all of this, the gravity of the threat, the resistance of the electric utilities, some members of Congress who have blocked the kind of legislation that's needed, there has been, in no small measure, thanks to your efforts, and I'd like to say I think on also the part of the Secure the Grid Coalition, of which you are a leader, some progress in recent days. Very quickly, give us a sense of some of the hopeful signs and ways in which people might be able to help.
Well, the most hopeful sign that's out there is that we have been able to make progress. My task force, your Secure the Grid Coalition, which comprises just a handful of people, a handful of dedicated people working on this, you know, we've partnered with state legislatures. And at the state level, for example, we achieved a breakthrough in the state of Maine. You know, after beating our heads against the wall for 5 years in Washington and making no progress, it took less than 5 months, beginning last year, for the state of Maine to decide it was going to protect its electric grid against EMP. It turns out that you can technically island the state grid, and this was one of the recommendations the Congressional EMP Commission, that by using blocking devices, surge arrestors, and the like, you can actually island a grid and protect the state grid. It doesn't affect its day-to-day operations in any way, because these are passive defense technologies, and they come into play only when the system is under attack. So,
but it may mean that that state's grid survives and enables other parts of the country to recover. Peter, talk also very quickly, we're almost out of time, about the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act that apparently is going to begin moving through the Congress at last.
Yes, this act is designed to require the Department of Homeland Security to adopt a new national planning scenario that focuses on EMP. There's 15 canonical national planning scenarios, and none of them approximates the kind of nationwide catastrophe that an EMP would be. But for the first time, if DHS has to start planning and preparing for this, basically these national planning scenarios are the basis for all planning at the federal, state, and local level for emergency training and resource allocation as well.
This legislation could really kickstart things and get us to the point where the kind of protections that we know are needed could be enacted and put into place. Peter Pry, I appreciate tremendously your contributions to our understanding of this problem and your efforts to help lead us out of this extraordinary peril, both in the Central Intelligence Agency, the House Armed Services Committee, now with your own executive directorship at the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. Your books, your op-ed pieces, your appearances on media like this are really godsends. And I want to thank you on behalf of our listeners. Come back to us again very soon with updates, if you would. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.